I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
More cowbell, more horny in front of the net. Just about anything you could think of the Penguins could use before Game 2 starts at 8 o'clock tomorrow night in Toronto against the Canadiens. It is 93.7 The Fan. I'm Chris Mack of The Fan Morning Show with you for just another 15 minutes or so. Then Ron Cook's in. Then at 12:20, the preview show ahead of a 2:20 first pitch between the Pirates and the Cubs at Wrigley Field here on 93.7 The Fan. We resolved the phone issues, and he joins us live from the bubble in Toronto, Dan Kangurski of Pittsburgh Hockey Now. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning. Just to be clear, I'm not in the bubble. I don't want to mislead folks. I'm in the hub, but not the bubble.
Okay, but you're closer than the rest of us, I guess. You can smell the hockey from where you are, which obviously is a good thing for you and Pittsburgh Hockey Now. Great coverage there, and we always appreciate it. So let's start with, is it a simple fix for the Penguins? I look at it and say, hey, Mike Sullivan's got it nailed about as much as any head coach could after a Game 1 loss. We need more traffic in front of the net, more bodies, more screens, more deflections, more Patrick Hornquist-style work, essentially. Is it as simple as that?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you have to ask the question, because it was patently obvious last night. The Penguins had 3.5 hours to figure this out, to get more bodies to the net. So in a very micro sense, absolutely. They allowed Carey Price to see most or all of those 41 shots that they fired actually on net last night. They actually had 96 shot attempts. 41 actually were in that 4x6. But the bigger question to me is, why didn't they? They knew what they had to do. They're not an inexperienced greenhorn team. So why didn't they get to the net? Why didn't they put some backsides in his face mask? And I think that's what I'm going to explore a bit today.
Well, is it a matter of you go in there and the redwood falls on top of you, the lumber hits the back of your neck or the back of your spine a couple of times from Weber and Petrie and Sherratt and the big goons on the blue line, for lack of, not goons, but, you know, those guys hammer away at you enough and you get a little bit more wary about going to the blue paint?
Well, if that's the case, then you lose. And you're not a Stanley Cup contender or going to be. And it really does come down to that. Do the Penguins have the heart, the willingness, the desire to do all that's necessary? I mean, you've been around sports long enough. You know there's a giant difference between playing well and moving on and doing all that you have to do and all that you can do to win. And the Penguins played well and moved on last night. They didn't do all that they could.
Is it imperative upon Mike Sullivan to make the personnel changes to the power play, or to simply roll out the same personnel and expect them to do something different? Because, again, the immediate thought, and I had it halfway through the game last night, as you point out, these thoughts, this analysis could take place on the fly last night, and the Penguins seemingly made the analysis and decided not to make the changes or didn't see it for whatever reason. But my immediate analysis is you take 72 and you put them in front of the net.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all kind of had that same thought. Now, there are advantages to having Zucker on the power play. He's a better skater. He plays with the puck a little better than Hornquist. He can do some additional things. You can put Zucker in the high slot like they tried to do in the regular season and kind of have him in a sniper role. But that kind of defeats the purpose a little bit, though, if you do that and have Jake Guentzel. on the power play unit, which they did a bit as well. So I was perplexed and confused, as everyone else, by the personnel decisions. But ultimately, anybody could have done that. I mean, Hornquist is special, the way he can stick in the crease and take those hacks and whacks. But the lack of success or trying was startling.
Dan Kangurski of Pittsburgh Hockey Now. He's in Toronto joining us here on 93.7 The Fan after the Pens Game 1 loss to Montreal. I realize the problem with the power play may not have necessarily been whoever was running the point, especially on the second power play. It looked to me like Schultz and Marino were very comfortable, and John Marino, I think, had a phenomenal game overall, not just including his power play work. I don't think we'll see a coach like Mike Sullivan make such a drastic change as to put John Marino on the top power play as the lone defenseman, but I think there is something to be said for making what may look like drastic changes in the eyes of a veteran head coach that could be right in front of you in a five-game series where you've got to make big moves, big changes after a game one loss.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the NHL used the five-game series from, 80 to 86, and the stats from back then were 82% of the teams that won game one won the series. If the Penguins are going to, like, oh, it's a marathon, not a sprint, think again. They had better, maybe not hit the panic button, but certainly light it up. Marino's not a top power play guy. Schultz is. But, yeah, you are correct that Marino was fantastic at keeping pucks in, at just moving and distributing both at even strength and on the power play.
What do you think it leads to Mike Sullivan playing that third line? It essentially became a fourth line last night, McCann, Marleau, and Hornquist, playing them as little as he did at even strength last night.
They weren't very good. That's why they were essentially nailed to the bench. Jared McCann, in effect, defaulted to his very defensive posture. That was kind of a problem in his career early on in Vancouver and Florida. When he's in the middle, he defaults to really trying to play defense, and the whole game kind of falls apart because then he's on his heels. I wondered if Patrick Marleau was even on the ice for much of the game. That was a coaching decision that was spot on. They weren't helping their team, and they were kind of a mess, actually.
And again, I don't expect, Dan, that Mike Sullivan is going to make any drastic personnel changes, whether it be shuffling his forward lines or even scratching someone who was a part of the lineup in game one. But it strikes me that they could use a little bit of the energy and intensity that guys like Lafferty and Rodriguez brought during those scrimmages.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, though, if you're turning to Sam Lafferty and Evan Rodriguez to save your team, you're in really deep trouble. The Penguins stars are going to have to put the puck in the net. The Penguins secondary scorers are going to have to put the puck in the net and do the things that they need to do. Brian Rust is going to have to get to more pucks and put them on the stick of Evgeny Malkin. And Jason Zucker is going to have to put himself in a scoring position. They can't watch Malkin do it. Connor Sherry actually has to hit the net with a shot rather than paint the glass and all of those things. If you want to put Sam Lafferty in, who do you take out, though? Do you take out Patrick Marleau? That's a really tough call. But in full disclosure, Chris, I haven't seen a lot from Marleau outside of training camp, which I was very impressed with, but in the games, the eight games he played with the Penguins and last night, I haven't seen much to hang my hat on.
Before I let you run, Dan Kangurski, who's in Toronto from Pittsburgh Hockey Now, covering what's going on with the Penguins and Canadiens, but obviously you've got your Hockey Now sites around the country and you've been around the league. So what was most surprising to you out of those other four games yesterday? I was slightly surprised that the Rangers didn't provide more pushback to the Hurricanes. Certainly ugly injury for Mark Scheifele and the Jets and their loss to the Flames, and I have a feeling that series is going to get very ugly very quickly if it hasn't already. But I think the Oilers coming out looking so flat for the first 20 or 30, even two full periods yesterday afternoon against the Blackhawks, I think was the biggest surprise.
Well, I actually did predict that one, so I can't say I'm surprised by it. I really thought the Penguins were the big surprise yesterday. Everything, you know, the Rangers are not a pushback team, Chris. You know, their color commentator has called them out for being soft at times, you know. But the Penguins just being high energy but lackadaisical on some of the small details of their game, I think floored me last night. I was kind of watching it with almost disbelief. Like, this is the Penguins that I predicted could, you know, make it to Edmonton and the conference final. Wow, you know, what happened to this team?
Well, maybe it's just the wake-up call they needed, although nobody really enjoys a wake-up call in a best-of-five series. As you pointed out, the teams that win game one, 82% of the time go on to win the series. So the Pens will have to reverse that trend starting tomorrow night. Dan, enjoy being up there and, like I said, being that close to the hockey that you can probably smell it. We appreciate you checking in this morning.
Appreciate it. Today's the final day of quarantine. Look out, Toronto.
Oh, no. Look out. Dan Kangurski on the loose in the Hub City. We appreciate it. Go to Pittsburgh Hockey Now. Tons of great coverage there. We appreciate it as always, Dan. Stay safe, and we'll keep an eye on things as the Pens progress.
Take care.
That's the thing. That game five, that best of five number that Dan pointed out, that I mentioned Milbury had pointed out on the broadcast last night, more than 80% of the time, the team that wins game one in this best of five setup wins the series. That's an alarming trend. And look, I still believe the Pens beat the Canadiens. I still believe if the Pens don't have to play the Bruins, they go all the way, as Dan pointed out, to Edmonton in the Cup Final. And they maybe even win the whole damn thing if they don't have to play the Bruins at some point. But right now, maybe last night is just the wake-up call they needed. But if they come out tomorrow night and look anything like they did last night in not going to those dirty areas, banging home the rebounds and the loose pucks, this would be something. It would be. It would be the most embarrassing series loss in franchise history if they were to lose to the Canadiens in this best of five. Sorry. Worse even than the loss to the Islanders in 75. Or the Islanders last year, for that matter.